Alright, we're gonna go ahead and get started. Because I have ridiculous amount of slides.
Oh, excuse me, sorry.
Sorry. Big paper, little paper, pen. If you fold the papers I gave you and don't look at them till the end, it's not, I just saw you doing this, so I figured I'd say it again. But it's not a big deal. It's a thing.
Take one of these.
Take one of those. No, I don't need you to take it at all. All right, let's go ahead and get started. I was asked to do a PowerPoint on how to learn languages and why to learn languages, more or less. I think the emphasis they wanted was ministry, and that's going to come up. But as far as why you should learn a specific language, the only language that I can think to possibly make a case and that a Christian should learn in all circumstances is biblical Greek. Everything else is subject to your situation. If you live with Spaniards close or Mexicans, you learn Spanish. It all depends. So it all depends on where you live at and what language you learn. I assume most of you are here either because everything else was sold out or you actually have a language that you want to learn. So we'll get into that. Pen, paper, and you can share that. All right. Hang on. I have a lot of slides, a lot of information. By the numbers, Summer Institute for Linguistics gives around 7,106 spoken languages. Could very well easily have changed by now. The basic point is to say that there are a lot of languages out there. The problem with that stat, and this fun little graph that you see on your screen, is that it doesn't take into account dialects and changes. So if you go to, at least the graph doesn't, if you go to Morocco, they speak Moroccan Arabic. That's basically the language they speak. People will say they speak Arabic in Morocco. Sort of. They speak Arabic, but they also speak Moroccan Arabic, which is a dialect of Arabic. They also speak native languages, which you see as Hassaniya Arabic, Judeo-Moroccan Arabic, Teshilhet, Central Atlas Tamazight, and Tarifit. So it's the point is there's languages everywhere, and every time you hear a stat, it's probably a little bit off. But and that goes for the stats you see in this PowerPoint as well. As far as why learn a language, Bible study is the ethical one, the one they want you to push probably. You're looking at Biblical Greek for that one, Hebrew, some parts in Aramaic. But that's it, right? Career advancement in the purely selfish by your wallet, so Spanish mostly, depending on your job. Ministry opportunities, so immigrants to your area, wherever you live. So, for example, in Dover, Delaware, I know we have Spaniards or Mexicans, and I know we have Moroccans, and there are probably some other people as well. I sent out a survey to the pastors and got a small percentage back, and a lot of people said that the people in their area speak English, so you don't really need their language. That's more or less true, except that when an adult comes to your area, he's going to start learning English, and he may never actually get to the point where he can discuss theological things in English. He may not. So you studying his language is going to narrow that gap more so. Plus you're going to understand his difficulties in learning or in understanding English, the nuances of learning a language. So if you understand that, you can at least sympathize with him when you use idioms. The study of ancient texts, and if that doesn't excite you, then I can say the study of the church fathers, which is more of an obligation. Again, that would be the church fathers in their original languages. And also because every translation is a lie, and every translator is a liar. So quoth a renowned, semi-renowned Greek scholar who shall remain nameless. But it's hyperbole to make a point, which is emphasized here. John 11:35. I had to use three languages, so I went with the shortest verse in the Bible. ESV up there says, Jesus wept. The Moroccan Arabic translation says, Budal Yesu kibki. The Greek, the Nestle, what's his face? The one that's laying up here, says, Edakrosen ho Jesus, more or less. Edakrosen, whatever. So you can take the verb in this verse and break it down. So you have a verb, aorist tense, which is basically your past simple tense, indicative, active, third person singular. Come over to the English, you can do the exact same thing. Verb, past tense, indicative, active, third person singular. Go to the Arabic, you can do the exact same thing, blah, 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 blah. The problem is that when you look at the Arabic, the verb that is in the past indicative, active, third person singular is not to cry. If you literally translate the Arabic, it says, and he started, Jesus, to cry. That's a translation faux pas, and it's not really going to get your gander up unless you are pretty stickler on exact literal translation, which means it got my gander up. But a disclaimer here, I don't actually speak Greek that well. I've putzed around in studying it, which means that the aorist tense that the verb is in could actually be accurately translated to what, or they could have that translation leeway to do what they did. It might. I don't think so, but it might. But there is that disclaimer of my knowledge being limited, so I may have erred. But in this case, I don't think so. Nuances like that are important when you get into theology. In this case, it's probably not a big deal because it doesn't really change much. But it has to do with integrity of the text. First resource. I have a lot of books and resources that you can read if you want. The Word of God in English, Leland Ryken. He hammers dynamic equivalency. That piece of paper is for you to write down all the terms that you don't know or want to understand. Well, it's basically thought for thought equivalency. And by hammers, I mean he's negative towards it. And he champions the essential literal translation. Leland Ryken served on the translation committee for the ESV, which means he's extremely biased towards the ESV. I use the ESV. I think it's a decent translation. It's not considered the most literal translation on the market. It's a very literal, but it's not the most literal. I think there are a few others that might take the cake on that one. He says they arrogate to translation something that should be left to interpretation and commentary. One of the beauties of the Greek Bible is that it leaves certain things vague. And then a translator will come along and he'll translate it, and in trying to make it clearer, he picks a side. Does that make sense? And so that's one of the things you don't want in translation. If it's vague, leave it vague. And I should start out by saying there are many opinions, and you're hearing mine. This book also increases an understanding of the variables between languages and their translations, which gives you a better perception, I guess, when you're studying the Bible, when you come across the verse that says God doesn't tempt and then God tempted Adam, you freak out until you've studied Moroccan Arabic and you realize that the word for to test, jarb, is the exact same root or word that the word, sorry, messed that up. Well, no, I didn't. But the point is, the word to test, Paul says, test every spirit, and he says the word jarb. On the word for temptation, it's the same exact root, jarb. And so knowing that in the English it flies between those two words, you can look and assume that there's probably something linguistic going on, go to the Greek, and find out the variables. You can pick up your papers later, it'd be great. Hope I don't go too fast on this one. But for the purpose of this exercise, we are going to look at methodologies for learning three different languages. Koine Greek, Spanish, and Pennsylvania Dutch. Koine Greek is probably one of the most important languages you should learn as a Christian because of 27 books that were written in Koine Greek. It's going to stand in as our dead language. So how to study a dead language. It's quasi-dead in that Greek still is spoken in Greece, believe it or not. And whereas Latin is quasi-spoken in Spanish, Italian. Is that it? Maybe more.
French,
yeah, more or less, sure. Spanish is our modern language with roughly 42 million speakers, and depending on what website you look at, but it's It's a big number, is the point.
420 million.
Mm-hmm. That's what they said.
We said 42.
What I said. Like I said, the point is that it's a big number. Thank you. For the recording, I messed up. It's 420 million. Pennsylvania Dutch, the number they throw out there is 300,000. I have no idea. I don't know if I should use a baby or an old man. The point is it's underdeveloped. And so we'll look at how to study a dialect. That wasn't supposed to be like... The point is the language is old. So it's... I'm going to let you giggle at that one. All right. So we're going to go over methods. And I'm starting out with broad methods that can usually be used in all three. But we're going to go over methods for script. The problem with script is that it has to be a language that you spell. So English, Arabic, Latin, German, French, Russian, et cetera, but not Chinese and not hieroglyphics and languages of that yoke. Flashcards are universal. I mean, because what you do when you understand something, you look at it and it registers something in your brain, the word that's associated with that object. And then audio. Audio is going to play a bigger role in tonal languages, but obviously audio is essential. Audio is great for passive learning as well. So if you're doing something, a task that involves your hands but not your brain, stocking shelves, my vocation, then you can throw audio in and you can listen and practice while yet doing another task. So it's passive learning, you might say. Might not be a bad time to look at the board behind me. That is the basic, yes, what I do now.
You mentioned tonal languages. Are there atonal languages?
Huh?
Examples of non-tonal languages? All ones I'm thinking of.
So, what I mean, thank you, what I mean is, I'm not an expert on it, but in Chinese, for example, if you say something, it means something, it means it has a different definition than something. Something, something.
Okay.
Whereas if you're learning a tonal language, you poor bugger, because it's incredibly difficult. But Arabic isn't a tonal language. English isn't a tonal language. Tones are important for emphasis, and like, which I will show you in a second. When you learn a language, sorry, let's go up on the board first. This is the basic structure we're going for in language learning. Now, this is very broad, and people that teach this for a living would probably have my head for this. But you're going to learn to read, or the script, and you're going to learn vocabulary, grammar, and that's going to build your fluency. My Spanish kind of looks like this, because I never really hit the grammar hard, and vocabulary only comes with the fluency that I've learned on the streets. I learned in the streets, basically, talking to people and reading whatnot. I can read, so that should be down there. But so I have a bit of fluency with almost zero understanding of grammar and not a lot of vocabulary. This represents my Moroccan Arabic. So I can read, have some vocabulary and some grammar, and I can talk fast about certain subjects, but not extensively on every subject. So it's basically what you're going for. Right. When you're learning a language, you're exercising different muscles. Think of it that way. Your hearing is different from your speaking. You might be able to speak perfectly in a language and not understand a lick because your ears are different from your mouth. You might know what you think it's supposed to sound like, but only your ears can learn what it's supposed to sound like. And that has variables of accents, speed of the speaker, how people butcher the English language when they speak. Like gonna, like that is, If you learn, I am going to the bank, or no, sorry, I am going to eat, and then somebody says, I'm gonna eat. Your brain is not gonna process that as I am going to eat if you learn language from the book, if you will. So part of it, that's why you learn audio, quote unquote, separately from speaking. Speaking, your mouth is a muscle. So repetition, repetition, repetition is going to make it instinct. For example, when you speak, you're not thinking about individual letters that you say. You're thinking about words and concepts translated into speech. When you type, it's the same exact way. You don't type A and D. You type the word and. Your mind, if you're good at typing, or if you're a millennial, should. Your mind knows how to type and without thinking. I can't spell. I'm bad at spelling. So if I need to learn how to spell something, I will put my fingers on an imaginary keyboard and type out the word. Because my mind, when I type, isn't thinking how to spell. It's thinking, produce that word. And my hands remember how to spell it better than my mind does. Does that make sense?
No.
But so I can type, and if I'm trying to type fluency, if I get a letter wrong, my hands are saying something's wrong. What have you done? It's not perfect. Like, I still type things wrong. And keep your eyes out. You might catch some stuff. So that's hands down at the bottom. Eyes work with hands. Eyes are reading. When you read, you don't read by the letter unless it's a new word. You're seeing that whole letter, whole word, and you're snapping through it. And you're reading. But, of course, if it's a new word, you have to process it. Right. For example, and this translates to language learning. I went to a cattle auction. And I saw the auctioneer, and he's actually not a bad auctioneer as I watched him, but I wasn't impressed the first time I went. And I thought, anybody can do this. So I went to YouTube, and I watched auctioneers, and I wrote down the words that they were saying. Can anybody hear auction or bid call? Shucks. Oh, I'm fine. I'll be all right. So then I started and tried to figure out how to auctioneer. And in 2 days, I hit a rhythm. So you're trying to force yourself to say something, and all of a sudden you get that point where it clicks, and you don't really have to think. And in 7 days, you get, hey, good have been now five, good have been now five on them five, good have been now five, now six, good have been now six, I got five, good have been now six on them six, good have been now six, good have been now six on them five. And boom, it's right there. It's because you're it's not great, I realize, but it's there. And so your mouth is going to remember what to do if you repeat it often enough. That's what repetition does for you, to the point where you can do it without thinking. Resource, Anki, flashcards, essential. I was slow to pick this up, but it is invaluable. It's free for your computer. It's expensive for your iPhone. The basic concept is spaced repetition, which means that if you look at the bottom of the Canon picture, you have, again, hard, good, easy. Hard is 13 days, good is 15, easy is 23. That represents the amount of time until that card comes back. So if was hard, I would push hard. That means it's going to send that card 15 days into the future. 13 days into the future. In 13 days, that card is going to come back. And then I'll do it again. If you look at the card for Tricien, or electrician, you see that it's 8.1 months and a year. So I've done that card enough, and I know it, because Tricien is amazingly close to electrician, that I can send that card a year in advance and know that probably when it comes up next year, I'll still know it. Because I've gone through that process of 1 day, 2 days, 4 days, 8 days, 16 days, all the way up to a year. And it's something to do with the way that you memorize, that it sticks in your head better. So it's a really good system. www.anki.srs, which stands for Spaced Repetition System, to get it. There's also resources, an extensive shared database. So if you're studying Spanish, you're in luck, because there are probably thousands of cards that people have made that you can go on and access, and you don't have to create your own cards. If you're studying Moroccan Arabic, you're a little bit in trouble. There's one file on there put on by a school in Morocco, obviously. But you do have to deal with their own errors. It's something to keep in mind. Portability. So you can have it on your computer, your phone, and you can study in different places, and it'll sync. So if you do it on your computer, it syncs, and next time you open the phone app, it'll be there. Flexibility, cards can be viewed in an instant at any moment. So there's really no excuse for not getting it done. And that being said, I have a backlog on my thing. But for example, how many people use the restroom? If you're a woman, you don't have to raise your hand. But if you're a man, you have to. All right. How many people, and I risk being the only one here, but how many people mess with their phones while on the toilet? Yeah, you know who you are. Which means that if you go to the bathroom roughly once a day, remember that emphasis thing I was talking about? That's the emphasis. If you go to the bathroom roughly once a day, you're fine. Did you guys miss the joke? Okay. Whatever. Emphasis is important. Then you can do your flashcards. Or if you get up really early before your family while you're at breakfast, view your flashcards. Anyway, that's that. I'm going to get in trouble with that thing. Keyboards, another tool. Type in the language you're trying to learn. It's an asset, and it's putting you in the language. Keyboards can be changed to pretty much any script. My keyboard right now is in English, Arabic, and Greek. And pushing the exact same keys, I get these different results. The English obviously makes sense. The Arabic and Greek do not. So you do have to memorize the layout, but again, that's muscle memory. You do it enough, and it's going to be instinct. Because I can type in three languages, I have a lot of missed keys, so it takes a little bit longer. Resource, Fluent Forever. It systematically outlines the SRS. He's actually a big fan of the Anki app. He champions that. He references research on linguistics and memory. He talks a lot of, he explains better than I did the values of spaced repetition systems. Dispels the geezer myth. There's, people will talk about how old people can't learn a language. That is completely bogus. You might have to work a little bit harder than the other guy, but you can do it. Even to the point of accents, which is talked about in this book. It provides a step-by-step learning plan, so he gives a schedule of how to learn a language. Quantifies learning goals, talks about online resources, and gives the pros and cons of those online resources. He talks about making your own flashcards without English. I make it with English, because if I make a flashcard for weak, and this actually happened, so weak as in he is weak, you can't lift that thing. And then I make a flashcard for weakness, I'm in trouble because my flashcards are slightly similar and I don't actually know which one it was supposed to be. So I keep English with my flashcards. He talks about learning pronunciation first. Frequency dictionaries. A frequency dictionary is a dictionary that's written out in the order that that word appears in the language that you are learning. And they exist for most of the major languages. So if I get a frequency dictionary in English, it's probably going to start with like a or the or one of those like that. And then, so that kind of gives you an idea of what words to memorize first, and it increases your useful language base quicker than most. Grammar books and their uses. He doesn't decry them. He speaks of how to use them. Talks about online tutors and language exchanges, etc. One thing about this book, though, it's very much like having a conversation with a guy in a bar. So it wasn't written by a Christian, and some of the language is a little bit, I'll say, objectionable. Learning to read, one of the first things you're going to want to do, especially if you're learning by yourself, because if you don't know how to read the language, you can't jolly well study any textbooks. Different languages have different characteristics. For example, the English language has 26 letters and fairly well complicated. In Spanish, you're gold because most letters have one sound. In English, you're up a creek in that the letter I has two sounds, A and E. So IE went to the store. It's not A went to the store, or it's not E went to the store. It's IE went to the store. If you just look at the text or at the script, you have no idea. And the letter I also has different sounds based on where it is in the word, long, short, etc. So English is complicated with this method, and it's something that you have to watch out for when you choose your language and go for that script. Greek, I don't actually know. I can more or less read Greek, actually use this method, but I don't know the combinations of letters that have their own sound. So I can kind of make stuff up. Arabic, on the other hand, has one sound for one letter, with one or two exceptions. And there's no lowercase, there's no case in that lowercase, uppercase with Arabic. Right. At this point, you're not really learning to read, you're just learning the sounds that the language makes, which means that you can combine these letters to make any combination of sounds you want. The Arabic that just popped up on the screen says, Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers. The general idea is that in 26 days, you can learn 26 letters, if you do it slow. First day, you're going to fill two or three pages with this. A, big case, uppercase, and do it ridiculous amount of times until you're not even thinking about how to form the letter. That's the biggest thing. You're going to be learning what the letter is and how to form it instinctively without having to think, you know, up, down, and across. Your hand is going to learn what it's doing. Second day is AB, 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 uppercase, lowercase. Fill notebooks with this. Not notebooks, pages. Pages with this. Day 9 is going to look like this. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, uppercase, lowercase. And you can do this in the speed you desire. Like, it doesn't have to be one letter a day. The slower you go, especially if you have the time, the less you're going to have to backtrack and relearn stuff. But again, that's all up to you as far as scheduling out your language learning. And play with it. If you're doing it on your own, not in a school setting, you can be flexible and make things up as you go along. The Bible method. I talked to a guy who talked to a guy that learned Arabic using the Bible method, which blew my mind. Usually you need a dictionary to do it. But you basically take two copies of the Bible and compare them. And the first day, if it's new, you'll probably go with the first verse and learn every language, every word in the first verse. You wouldn't actually need the English Bible for this, by the way, if you have a dictionary. So this is John 1:1. En el principio era el verbo, y el verbo era con Dios, y el verbo era Dios. So in the beginning, it's because we have Spanish influence, it's fairly easy to pick out. So principio, principle, or the first, you can sense the roots there, kind of create those associations to memorize it. Probably means first, era el verbo, so was the word. Here you have verbo being capitalized, which means it's a word of importance. So you can probably figure that means word. Y el verbo era con Dios, y el verbo era Dios. So that's your first day, or however you can go until your brain fries. Which means that you can read, once you've looked up every word in that verse, you can read that verse over and over again and know what every word means. So when you want to review, you go back and read that verse. That gives you vocabulary, that gives you grammar, and it also trains your brain as to what sounds right. You know how in English when somebody says something and it just kind of sounds a little bit awkward? You got it? Okay. You didn't laugh, I was wondering. That is what you want to happen in your second language as well. Then eventually you're going to get to the point where you can do entire chapters in one day. You're going to want to make lists of these verses, of these vocabulary as well. So this is mine for Moroccan Arabic. In James chapter 5, these are the words that I don't know in James chapter 5. So I have the English word, the Arabic word, and then I have verse 2, Google Translate, and context. This is a result, that's where I found the definition. Context is where it's in the scripture, and Google Translate. Again, I'm dealing with a dialect, which means that I go to Google Translate in the language that it's a dialect of, and if it correlates, that's great. If it doesn't, I'm kind of sunk. You also have B106 for the one dictionary that I have. I'm so excited. You can kind of do it however you want, but then these words are then made into Anki flashcards, and I have a file that's labeled New Testament Vocab. So right now, I can read the book of Jude, 1st and 2nd, 3rd, John, James, 1st and 2nd Peter, and some of Hebrew. And I quote-unquote know every word in those passages, so that when I review it, I go straight on down through it. I use the conjugated form that it's in. I don't use the root, but you can choose your method. Red means I couldn't find the definition, and that's a guess. Resource, YouVersion is a Bible app. It's not the best as far as format, but it's the best because it has 1,364 versions and 1,007 languages. So I found the Moroccan Arabic Bible on this app. Some of them have audio, not all of them. I also found this, which I think is Pennsylvania Dutch, more or less. It said it was. I don't know. It said Pennsylvania Dutch. But, and don't laugh at me, but if I read this, it sounds like Im of ang vos wat, uns wat vo wer Gott, uns wat vo Gott. Is that anywhere close? See? Because I don't know how to read Pennsylvania Dutch. I recognize the letters, it's Latin script, but I don't know how to read it because I don't know the sounds. Not all versions have audio. Audible is an excellent resource. It costs a little bit of money. If you're learning one of the modern languages, grab an audiobook, preferably a book from your childhood that you love and that you know really well. Listen to it over and over again. And this is training fluency. So you're kind of training fluency at the same time as vocabulary. But, so for example, I can say, tenía que llover, and I know it means, it would have to rain, because that's the context it's in, that's what he said, but I couldn't explain to you whatever tense that is. I just know that's what was said at that situation. So it's in my mind, and next time I'm in that situation, that's fluency. It's not necessarily grammar. Right, like I said. And it's also passive learning, as I mentioned before. Teaches the ear correct pronunciation as well. So when you're looking at your language that you want to learn, per se, you're going to want to have a daily routine. ACE has goal cards. Do something very similar to that if you can. New vocab every day at your discretion. There have been points where I've kind of overwhelmed myself and just quit adding new cards until I learned the old ones and then went on. Break down the language into parts. When you're studying the grammar, simple grammar first, move on to the more complicated stuff. And especially if you're learning it on your own schedule, go slow. That way you can more appropriately learn that step. I think I said that before. Then you don't have to go back and repeat it. But there's nothing wrong with going back and repeating something. Done it a lot. And again, methods are going to vary depending on what language you're learning. There is this concept out there that says learning like a child is the best way to go. It is the opinion of the speaker that is abjectly stupid. Because you are not a child. You have resources that children do not have. You have intellect, the capacity to memorize, that children, the discipline that children do not have. Also, you're not in a situation where you don't have any other way to voice anything except crying. You're not in a situation where 12 hours a day people are speaking to you in this foreign language in a friendly way. You're not in the same capacity as children. Plus, children study for what? How long is it before children start speaking? 2 years? Year and a half, 2 years? I have no idea. Whatever, that long before they're saying anything, whereas you can start saying phrases the first day. So whatever you do, don't wait a year to start trying to speak your language. Abjectly stupid. Right, so that was kind of an overview of different methods, but it was also Spanish, because Spanish is insanely developed with an insane amount of resources. So everything that we previously discussed can be used to study Spanish. And Spanish is arguably the easiest language to learn coming from English, because languages relate differently to each other. Different languages are easier for different people to learn. If you speak German, you're probably going to learn Norwegian easier. Oh, it actually says here, High German, Middle High German, German, West Germanic, Dutch. Sure, see, because of family relations. 1066 was awful for the English, but it was fantastic for the English person today trying to learn Spanish, French, Latin. Because in 1066, the French invaded England, and the nobility spoke French, and a lot of French was inserted into the English language, and that is why we have so many cognates between English and Spanish. Well, that's one of the reasons. Cognates, Latin for blood relative, if you believe the internet. This game is called Pick the Spanish Column. So finally you got, so it's not quite fair, because you have flexible, and what I can only assume is flexible, or banana, or incurable, bicicleta, or bicicleta, for our friends in the south. Beware of false friends, which are words that sound like an English word that completely are not an English. Somebody else has studied Spanish. Who's laughing? Okay, all right. The story is told of a woman that was speaking in front of a church. True or not, it's a good story. It makes the point. And she wasn't a native Spanish speaker, and the pastor asked her to come up and say a few words, which means I can only assume she was a voluntary missionary. And she said, I can't even say it in Spanish, but something like, "Estoy muy embarazada, es el culpo del pastor," which essentially says, she was trying to say, I am very embarrassed, embarazada, and it's the pastor's fault. What she said in Spanish is, I am very pregnant, and it's the pastor's fault. I don't know if it's a true story. I kind of hope it is. But it makes the point very well. False friends are not friends at all. All right, why learn Spanish? I spoke a little bit about these. Again, numbers, they mean big. Second language of the U.S., 41 million native speakers in the U.S., apparently. I talked about how it lowers cultural boundaries, and you can understand the misunderstandings. Having learned Spanish, you understand why that guy said what he said in English that makes no sense, but if you translate it into Spanish, it makes perfect sense because it falls into his word order or an idiom, etc. Idiom is like top of your head kind of thing. Right, that was Spanish. We're going to move into Pennsylvania Dutch, which is going to function as our dialect. I don't know why you would learn Pennsylvania Dutch. I really want to. Heritage, if you work with the Amish, kicks and giggles is a valid reason to learn a language. if you're into that kind of thing. But the struggle is real, as they say. There are no textbooks or dictionaries. At least that's what I put in my slideshow until I Googled it and found six, at least. These are on Amazon. I don't know the merits of any of these, but they exist. So if I was going to learn Pennsylvania Dutch, I would find textbooks, I would get the textbooks, and compare the textbooks. You have the same problem in Moroccan Arabic in that you have different textbooks that have different layouts. So doesn't matter, but for example, in Moroccan Arabic, you have one textbook that gives it a long vowel, you have one textbook that gives it a short vowel. My kind of standard is if Wycliffe has translated it, it's not a bad idea to go with whatever Wycliffe has. In Moroccan Arabic, this is essentially the biggest piece of literature that is out there. Committees have put it together, and for whatever reason, decided to do what they did with the Moroccan Arabic language. So I'm going to assume they knew more than I did, and I'm going to go with this one, and the dictionaries that don't agree with it are fodder, I guess. I don't know if that holds true with what Wycliffe has done with Pennsylvania Dutch. I have no idea. I haven't actually looked at it, and whatever you decide to do, you are going to have people from the area whose dialect is not represented in the book be upset and not like it. They can deal with it. You have histories of people that have translated the Bible and that have solidified the language, whether it's monks translating portions of the Latin Vulgate into Old English, whether it's Wycliffe translating it into English, whether it's the King James Bible, whether it's Martin Luther's Bible. Any literature you have in a language is going to solidify the language over time. On that note, I'm going to take this opportunity with an audience to hit a pet peeve. I was once, when you talk about missions training, people talk about language translation, and explaining the gospel to people, and there is this absurd example that is out there. If you are speaking to a bunch of people in like the Arctic on a slab of ice hunting baby seals that have never heard the word sheep or what a sheep is, what do you do with that? And people say, you could use like a baby seal instead of a sheep. I heard that and I was so angry I almost wet myself. And I will tell you why right here. Let's say you guys are the tribe on a slab of ice, right? And I'm going to take a stick, and I'm going to draw a sheep, and I'm going to say, I'm going to assume you have sled dogs. It's like a dog, but it's not a dog. It has white fluffy hair that people use to make clothing. It feeds on grass. I'd probably have to say something else because they don't have grass. There's no word for that in English because that's the language that you ice people speak. And since I'm a missionary, I've obviously studied Biblical Greek, because who would go to the mission field without studying Biblical Greek? I'm going to take amnos, whatever, and I'm going to say, all right, we're going to use this word to mean sheep. I'm going to Englishify it into amnos. I'm going to put the accent over there because it flows better off the English tongue. And I'm going to say, this is called an amnos, and then I'm going to explain what it is. So, ice people, what is this called? Right. That took how long? Like what, a minute? Which means that in, let's say, a year, you could have an entire tribe of people knowing what a sheep is, having a word for sheep, or you could completely distort the biblical narrative and call it a baby seal, which, that's dirty. So if you ever hear somebody say that, throw something at them and then explain this. So what is this called again in English? Thank you. All right, that was a rant. I'm sorry, I feel better now. YouTube in Pennsylvania Dutch, and you're going to find this with dialect. I haven't been able to find anything satisfactory as far as audio for Pennsylvania Dutch. I don't know if it's out there or not. And all it would take is for somebody that speaks Pennsylvania Dutch to grab a mic and read passages. I'm looking at you two people that raised your hands that said they speak Pennsylvania Dutch. Does anybody else speak Pennsylvania Dutch? People that came late. Ha! This is great because I can hammer it with people that are in my culture and not be near as worried about whether or not I offend you. As far as accents, mockery is the key to mastery. What I mean by that is, so when somebody from Spain speaks in English, what does it sound like? Or Mexico. Can anybody mock a Mexican accent in English? Because you know what you have to do. You have to go to the store. I don't know. The point is, do that. Doing that will train your mouth for when you speak in Spanish. Does that make sense? So instead of saying, por qué tú necesitas ir al sitio, I don't know, whatever. You can say, por qué tú necesitas ir a la plaza, porque tú sabes cómo hablar en español. ¿Entiende? Because you practiced mocking them in their own language, which is usually not acceptable. But in front of your mirror with a recording, you're fine. Or you could convince or hire a PA Dutch speaker to help you, which I have no idea how that would go across. I've never actually tried to ask an Amish person to help me learn Pennsylvania Dutch. For those of you that speak Pennsylvania Dutch and have any kind of desire to preserve the language, I give you resource number, I forget. Audacity is a free software program on the internet. You can download it, and it is fairly easy to use. You have to tinker around with it a little bit to figure it out, but it's very much like video editing, if you've ever done that, except it's audio. And as soon as you figure out all the complicated features, you're good. That's free. It's not as hard as it sounds. And then grab a USB mic for $50, and you're good to go. And you can sit down, and you can preserve that bit of culture which you value. If you don't value it, I'll find somebody who does. Fine. I have this mic. There are plenty others out there. This is the one I chose to get, and it works fine. But I'm sure there could be others that work better. I don't know. I shopped a little bit, but online reviews are nasty. Pennsylvania Dutch New Testament can be found on the website there, and it's also on your paper that I gave you. If you haven't got one, there's a paper up here when you leave. And that is what I held up. Again, I have not researched it to try to figure it out. I have to go faster, man. Resource. Pennsylvania Dutch does not have a unified text. If you ever read The Forgotten Founding Father, which is the story of Noah Webster by Joshua Kendall, also in your list, blew my mind with what this man did to the English language. He didn't do it by himself. He was standing on the shoulders of giants, if you will. But he is largely responsible for the English that we speak today. And of course, he's the namesake for the Webster Dictionary. He's also responsible for other things. But reading that book, especially if you're looking at the Pennsylvania Dutch, teaches you, shows you more what is possible. Koine Greek, our dead language. So Koine Greek, Alexander the Great set up his vast empire. Hellenization happens via various motivations. Fun fact, Hellenica is Hellenica in English, which means Greek. Ergo, Hellenization means Greekified. Also, on that note, ice people, what is this? How many people read Greek? What is this? Right. Alexander the Great died in June 323 BC. Rome conquered Greece in 146. More or less. I tried to figure out when this happened. There was a big battle at Corinth, apparently, that supposedly tipped the tide. Historic facts can be Googled later, doesn't really matter. The point is that Rome conquered Greece before Christ. So then the question then is, why do we not speak Latin instead of Greek? Don't speak it. Why do we not try to learn Latin to study the original biblical texts? Enter resource number, I forget. Empires of the World, A Language History of the World is a fantastic book to understand how languages move and develop. In some quotes in the book as to our subject matter, the outcome of Roman conquest was a total penetration of Greek into Roman culture, so that for the next 500 years, well-educated Romans could be counted on to be bilingual in Greek. Tutors and schoolmasters were typically of Greek extraction. In the first century BC, Gaulish notables were sending their children to be educated in Greek in Marseille, France, which, remember those things I was telling you about, the sounds that aren't quite, the letters that don't quite make the sounds? That is apparently said Marseille, am I right? Mm-hmm. Which is ridiculous. That's Marseilles. Which can basically be summed up in the Romans chose to build on Greek rather than replace it. Different conquering peoples have reacted differently with the languages that they conquered. 1066, French had a strong influence on the English, but was eventually quasi taken over by the English, and you get a hybrid. The Romans conquered Greece, and you get, but since Greek was already the administrative language, I'm getting ahead of myself. Koine dialects, dialectos, sorry. So it basically means common talk. So Koine Greek is common Greek. Greek was the lingua franca, like English today. Lingua franca is like the language of the Franks, which basically means the common language in the world. People today learn English, as people in yesteryear would have learned French, and before that Latin, more or less. Anyway, the point is, thus the New Testament was written in Greek, because that was the language of the day. Right, along with a certain apostolic fathers after that. The Bible, in its linguistic history, it was written in Greek, and the numbers, again, can be more accurate if you Google it, between 50 and 100 AD. Latin Vulgate was commissioned in 382. And what they did is they actually gathered translations that were already made in Latin, different, doesn't matter, but more or less, Latin Vulgate, 382. Vulgate means common, which is where we get the word vulgar. And that was a vulgar comment. So I'm guessing that at one point, common was an insult, and the common people started using the word common as an insult, and now vulgar, just, I don't know. But it's language, that's language. More or less, John Wycliffe produced the first English manuscripts in 1380, if you don't include portions and even the monks that translated into Old English. Again, see The Word of God in English by Leland Ryken. In the 1490s, an Oxford professor and the personal physician to King Henry VII and VIII, Thomas something, decided to learn Greek. After reading the Gospels in Greek and comparing it to the Latin Vulgate, he wrote in his diary, "Either this, original Greek, is not the Gospel, or we are not Christians." His point was that the language that they had the Bible in did not agree with the original language it was in, which happens if you're not careful with your translation. Same basic idea. This man actually translated into English and then had thousands of people storming, trying to hear the language in their original tongue. We are the opposite, more or less. We have the language so much in our original tongue that it's a problem, in that we have parallels that aren't necessarily translations. There is some value to that, in that if it's clearly labeled as a parallel. Right, because the point now is we, as a people, are going back to the original language to better understand it. Greek is the gold standard. It always has been and always will be. I use a different tense there, by the way. But the point is, every translation you have, people are still going to be saying, well, the Greek says, which has its own points one way or the other. We don't believe about Greek what the Muslims believe about Arabic, for example. The Muslims say that Arabic cannot be translated. Anything that's translated is not the Quran. And technically the Christians believe more or less the same thing. The difference is that we don't believe that Arabic is holy, nor do we believe the Greek is holy. The Bible is written in Greek not because Greek is a holy language or the language of God. It's written in Greek because that was the language that was being used today. What I do?
Where did they get that? The Arabic is the language spoken in heaven.
Yeah, that's what they think.
Okay, I heard a Pennsylvania Dutchman say one time, mm-hmm. I know that God speaks Dutch, but he asked Adam, "Wo bist du?"
Which is why... No. Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. So I am reading this and realizing that's not exactly clear. Greek is the original language God used for the New Testament. Just so that's clear. Right. I don't speak Greek as well as I should to make some of the claims that I'm making. But I've sat with people that do speak Greek, and they have talked to me about different nuances and whatnot in the Greek translation. And it is high near impossible to translate all the nuances that you find in Greek into English. To be fair, you can probably go your entire life using the English Bible and be fine. You shouldn't, but you can do it.
Isn't that true with translations in general, whatever the language, whatever the document?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Whatever. So anytime something is translated, you're in a little bit of trouble, and you're going to be better off going back to the original language. But that doesn't mean that translation isn't valuable, obviously. But, and here's one for you. The Bible was translated for the peasants.
Okay.
just so you know. For example, as far as nuance and translations, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. En arche en hologos, ka hologos en proston theon, ke theos en hologos. I have taken the articles, and I have made them red, What do you see? You don't have to see anything. Point is, in the last line, they don't have an article in the Greek before the word, oh, I can do this, check it out. Ha. Okay, this is an article for the Word of God. So, in beginning was the Word, and the Word was with the God, and God was the Word. And so, in the English, it says, and the Word was God. It doesn't really matter because of Greek. If they would have put an article here, as soon as I find my pointer, we would have God, or Christ is equal to God. It's the same thing as God. The God the Father, if you will. Christ is not all of God. All of God is not Christ, which is what's represented here. You put that article, you're saying all of God is all of Christ, and all of Christ is all of God, which would be totally discounting the Father and the Holy Spirit. Theological nuance represented by the lack of an article. And I hope I didn't just throw out heresy. Yes?
Aren't you making the point there, though, that you cannot literally translate a language?
Mm-hmm. Which is why...
If you have a literal translation, you get confused with everything.
Exactly. Which is why, especially in today's world of the information that you have in the palm of your hand, there's literally no excuse for any Christian to not study biblical Greek. None. In three... What's the Iceland or the English ice people's word for sheep? Thank you. It's good because I almost forgot. Specificity, we talked about. Longevity, every generation needs its Greek scholars. Firmness in the right, ESV, 1 Corinthians 11, translates it as women. Sorry, translates the word for women as wife, because as in Arabic, the word for wife and the word for women, or woman, singular, is the same. Apparently it's the same in Greek, and the translators, because of their understanding of the cultural situation of the day, instead of translating it literally as woman, translated it as wife. That's why in ESV, if you read 1 Corinthians 11, it said every wife should cover its head. That is part of what I was... ESV is a good translation, but that's one of those nuances that I was talking about, and as far as somebody taking a situation that's not quite clear, and the translator attempting to clarify it, which is stupid. Like I said, there are now no excuses. Clarity, even if it's clearly vague, which I think I talked about that a little bit. As far as your resources for learning Greek, you have an insane amount of choices. Somebody once said for every Greek professor, there's a Greek textbook. I have these two. For about $70, you can get The Basics of Biblical Greek by William Mounts, as well as a Greek New Testament, the Nestle Aland 28th edition. Which is awkward, because they changed it 28 times. But that has to do with manuscripts being discovered in textual criticism, which is a whole other workshop. This is a decent book, because it's made for pure beginners. You can start from scratch. A con, it uses the old pronunciation, which doesn't quite matter, unless you're picky, so it matters. There are people that are trying to decide what it would have been more pronounced, what would have been the correct pronunciation back in the day. And they do this using a variety of methods that won't be described here. But you can still read and understand Biblical Greek without pronouncing it right. They have a frequency dictionary for, I think, the top... It says 50, but I think it's 300. Maybe it's 50. Oh, for those that appear in the New Testament more than 50 times, there's a dictionary. And it comes with a plethora of online resources. There's a website made to accompany this book. This is kind of like a dumbed-down version of the textbook, as far as I understand. And this is also available for Kindle, if you're a fan of Kindle. And I think this is the one that's going to be used at EBI. But that could change at a whim. So when I wrote it, I was going off of an email. I asked my Greek-speaking friend, what is the best dictionary? And of course, he handed me, or he referenced me to a $140 textbook, or which is ridiculous. So probably not for the hobbyist. Audio is lacking for dead languages because it's dead. And again, they're fighting over what is the correct translation. Now, it's not quite true because Latin, I'm sure, has tons of dialogue. I haven't Googled it, but I assume so. Speech isn't emphasized, at least in Greek, because, see, all these things. I think the Greek Orthodox Church's liturgy is in ancient Greek, or is it Greek? Whatever. It's not emphasized, generally. Limited resources. I think we have a lot of old texts and textbooks, but it's not like you have a library of English novels or Greek novels that you can go back in. And the old texts that exist, I do not count as a library. There's like shelves of books, I guess. But again, these are very general. Google it and prove me wrong, I guess. Questionable pronunciation guys said that. And few people care. How many people here speak Greek? Like I said. A basic plan again, textbook. Memorize that frequency vocab list. They explain it in the textbook that I referenced, but it's a great jumping off point. Learn to read. Use the Bible method, especially because we're actually dealing with the Bible as our text. Like, it's the text that we're studying it to understand the text, and you can start that pretty much right away. And follow a textbook, and you should be all right. It's okay to read books you don't understand. Again, it has to do with the fluency. Same as the audiobook, except you're training your eyes this time. Get a Kindle, get a Spanish book, for example, and you can click the word, touch it if you will, and get a definition of that word in English. So a Kindle is fantastic for doing that with Spanish. Now, there are no Kindle versions of Moroccan Arabic, I don't think. But as far as learning Greek language, I made a chart, a very rough chart, which you can probably Google and prove incorrect again. But I took some of the Anabaptist fathers, and I tried to research their linguistic and education abilities or whatever. Ulrich Zwingli wasn't quite an Anabaptist, but he would have had a hand in starting the movement that resulted in Anabaptism. Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, and a master's degree at the University of Basel, which, to be fair, master's degrees and degrees in general mean a slightly different thing than what they do now. Conrad Grebel, Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, 6 years, 3 universities. The man had no degree, so I'm not sure what his deal was. The point is Greek, Latin, Hebrew. Felix Mons, Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, and I couldn't find any references to his education. George Blaurog, definitely spoke Hebrew, went to the University of Leipzig, which implies Latin, but I couldn't find anything that said he spoke Latin, so I didn't put it down. Menno Simons spoke Latin and had a knowledge of Greek. Balthasar Hubmaier, which I had never heard of before, had a PhD in theology at the University of something, and he definitely spoke Latin because of the university. And PhD in theology, I'm going to say he spoke Greek and Hebrew, but I have no idea. I couldn't find a reference, so I didn't put it down. The general point is that the Anabaptist movement started with men that were educated to the nines, which fun fact, translate that and say to somebody and see what they say. We now have the capacity as a church to where everybody can learn even independently because of the technology that we have. You can take your smartphone and in 2 years you can have a decent knowledge of biblical Greek. Language learning is not for those that are geniuses. It is for those that are disciplined. Does that make sense? You can train your body to do pretty much anything as far as linguistically is concerned. It's about repetition, correct study habits, etc. On the paper that I gave you, that is basically a list of resources that I used, and you can use it as a jumping off point. So if you don't like the book on how to learn languages, you can Google it and find 100 others. That's just what I use. You can use it as a bouncing off point. I also have my email address there at the bottom if you have any questions, or I could literally coach you to learn any language even if I don't speak it, because language learning is more about methodology than it is about, well, I don't know, it has a lot to do with methodology. The point of this workshop is to learn it on your own. Many, many people will see and probably listen to this workshop and freak out by saying the best way to learn a language is to go to the country where they speak it. And that is true, but the emphasis, this workshop assumes that you guys aren't just going to all go out to Spain and spend 3 years learning Spanish. This is for people that are living in the States, working their job, and want to learn and study more. These are the methods that can help you do that. Back to being able to speak Greek or to have an understanding of the original language in which the New Testament was written in. In 7 years, you could have a bunch of 14-year-olds that are completely, quote-unquote, fluent in Biblical Greek. In 12 years, you could have people at EBI completely fluent in Biblical Greek discussing theological concepts in the original language in which they were first communicated to us. It would take inserting it into the curriculum, the educational curriculums that you use. Piece of cake. It would not be difficult at all. All you need is somebody that can organize it and throw together a plan and the discipline to do it. Again, it wouldn't be that difficult. It would be a little bit complicated because most people haven't ever studied a foreign language because they don't understand the processes. But somebody was saying that the Jews did something similar in Israel to bring back the Hebrew language. I didn't quite research it, but it would be something to look at. Again, challenge the realms of the possible. It's not impossible to learn languages. It looks big because your eyes don't know what they're doing. Where's, I need text. Here we go. If you've never studied a Greek text, you have no idea what that says. And that's even cheating a little bit because there are letters that are very close to English. But once you train your eye to translate whatever those lines are into sound, it's blink of an eye kind of thing, quite literally. I can read Arabic because I studied it. My mind knows what it's doing. I've written it, so I can do something like... Akli arbi kedir. My mind knows what it's doing. It's repetition, it's practice. And you do it. Yeah. All right, that is all I have. It's 12:09, a little bit over time. I have books, some of them which were referenced here. If you want another size, shape, and feel, they're up here. That little piece of paper and pen, that's a language learning tool, but it's more for people that are in foreign countries. You're always going to want to carry a piece of paper around with you, something to write with. And you don't know a word, write it down, look it up, kind of thing. Any questions for the myriad of information that was thrown at your face?
Is Arabic right to left?
Yes. Yeah. But even then, the same techniques which I described here can be used for Arabic because it's a letter-sound combination.
Could you all learn Hebrew as well?
Me?
Yeah.
If I had time. Yeah. But case in point, it is one of the biblical languages. Yeah.
I just make this comment today. If you want to learn that language, don't get discouraged. Language, learning a language is hard. Let anybody tell you otherwise. It is hard work.
Sure. I agree with you, but if you split it up into half an hour segments a day, if you spread out that hard work over a year or two, 2 years, 3 years, it's a lot easier to lift it. It's very much like lifting a 500-pound block with 10 people instead of one person. You could probably lift it, you know, eventually. Yeah, you'll probably get frustrated at some point and throw something at a wall. Buck up. Any other questions? All right, thank you very much for your time. You're dismissed.
Thank you very much, Ron.
Know that they have, when they did studies on people, He said the one most important factor for people to learn the language, mm-hmm. what was it?
I have no idea.
Your desire to learn it.
Yeah, that's true.
You see, one most important factor. Because they took aptitude.